across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world. On the internet, by webcast, and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. And here we are, like magic, we've arrived at the first show of August. I think this year really is proof of what Art Bell talked about, the quickening. Life seems to be getting faster and faster, and many things seem to happen in a short space of time. And it just seems like yesterday that I was turning the year. There was a little bit of ice around, and then we moved into spring, and here we are in summertime. And that's a whole other story, because after the heat wave we had a few weeks ago, we've now had a lot of torrential rain and very cool temperatures. At one point, I even put the heating on. Weird, weird stuff. Don't think I can remember a summer like this. I hope that life is good wherever you happen to be, Northern Hemisphere, Southern Hemisphere, East or West. Thank you very much for all of the emails that continue to come in, the nice things that you've been saying about the show. Believe me, I see your emails as they come in, and I'm going to do some shout-outs probably in the next edition. I'm a little behind myself right now with one thing and another, but I've got some very good plans for some future shows. So here we are, like I say, first show of August, a very good guest. June Lundgren is a medium in Oregon, United States. Now, you know that I'm very picky about mediums, and we don't have very many on here. But when I find a good one, and a good psychic medium who can tell good stories, then I do feel compelled to put them on. And June Lundgren's story, I think you're going to love. So she's coming up next. If you want to connect with me, go to the website. It's theunexplained.tv. Follow the link there, either to send a PayPal donation or send me a message. The website maintained and curated by Adam Cornwell from Creative Hotspot in Liverpool. That is your one-stop shop. Please keep your donations coming. Vital for this show to develop. There will be news on developments with this show, and I know that a person once said to me, "How would you always say that?" And nothing appears to happen, but it will. It's just one of those things that if you do something and you produce it yourself, everything takes time, and everything takes money, and the money comes slowly, and the time goes too quickly. That, I think, is life. That's one of those things, isn't it? But thank you very much for all of your support in all the various ways that you've given it to this show, and for liking me and confirming that I seem to be on the right track with this, even when I feel that sometimes maybe I'm not. You help to steer me. And I'm very, very grateful. So please stay in touch. Otherwise, I don't know how this is going. Okay, let's get to the guest, June Lundgren now. She is a psychic medium and a battler with demons in quite an extraordinary way that I haven't heard before. You make your mind up about her and let me know what you think. June Lundgren in Oregon, thank you very much for staying up very late where you are. It's very early where I am. Thanks for coming on The Unexplained.
And thank you for having me, Howard.
Now, June, listen, I've got to apologize, first of all, because it's taken us a couple of months, I think, to sort this out, just because of weird things with my schedule over here, but we finally got it together. And I can't even remember whether it was me who sought you out or you who sent me an email about yourself. I think you sent me an email about yourself.
I did. I was curious. I had listened to your program, and I really liked it, and I thought, well, let me get in touch with Howard.
A lot of it's about keeping an open mind about stuff, and the field that you're in, and that is mediumship, we know is beset by fakes, people who may be crackpots, and misconceptions.
Very much so. In fact, I ran into one where I had someone seek me out for help regarding demon and removal, and she said that she had talked to this other gentleman who took money from them to come out, fly out, and proceeded to go into the house and walk around and go into a room and came out with a little bottle of water and said, "I've got it. I've got it. It's an elemental." And he claimed to have worked with me. And I'm like, "No, I have never heard of the gentleman." She said, "Oh, you work with so-and-so." And I said, "No, because we were talking about how I removed a demon from the Shanghai tunnels in Portland." And I said, "No, I have no idea who this guy is."
So somebody clearly read about you and tried to bask a little in the reflected glory.
Yes, unfortunately.
It goes with the territory. I mean, it is a very imprecise area.
And finding people who are sincere about this is very difficult. Look, I mean, you will know without me telling you that even if I find people who I believe are sincere, there will be people who will email me back to say, we don't want mediums on your show. We don't believe in any of this. How do you counter that kind of view?
Well, you know, it's like when I go in and remove a demon, people say, you know, well, how can you prove that? And I said, well, the only way I can prove it is because the people contact me afterwards and say how much they appreciate it, how they no longer have any kind of problems in their home, and things are much better. Their life has turned around. You have to, the proof is in the pudding, so to speak.
Mm. Well, I want to get into the stories, and you know that when you emailed me, it's all coming back now. I was most interested in this idea that you will go into somebody's home or go to somebody and cleanse them of whatever it might be. You know, a lot of mediums don't go there, so that's why I want to talk a lot about that. But I think we need to get your story first, because it is, it's pretty unique, isn't it? I mean, this one of the reviews of one of your books, The Medium's Guide, somebody says this woman claims to talk to God.
That's true. I do. It's not so hard. People talk to God when they're praying all the time. And it's not any different than that, other than I can hear him talk back. I was, for years, our family have all been, the women have all been mediums and psychics and healers. And one day I was talking to my sister, who's one of my guides, and I said, well, what would God say about this? Or what would God say about that? And she said, why don't you just ask him? And I'm like, really? How can I talk to God? And she said, just close your eyes, open your mind, and think about him, and he'll be there. And I thought to myself, it can't be that easy. It's got to be harder than that. And she said, no, just do it. She said, you humans, you try to make everything harder than it has to be. So I closed my eyes and I heard a voice say, I'm here, child. And I was raised by my grandmother, who was Pentecostal. And she believed in doing as the Bible says, try the spirits. Don't take them for who they say they are. Make them prove it. So I said, if you're really God, I said, prove it to me. And he says, I'm going to give you the gift of healing. And then the next thing I know, I'm like warm all over. I'm shaking and I wake up on the floor and I hear the same voice saying, you now have the gift of healing, the laying on of hands. And I thought to myself, how can you prove or disprove that? It took me years to become comfortable with the idea, because I'm in medicine. I've been in medicine all my life. And the brain part of me kicks in and says, you know, how can you prove it?
Hmm. And well, so, I read in your biography that you're a nurse. And yes. I would say that probably 10 or 15 years ago, what you do outside your nursing conflicts enormously with it. But I also know that a lot of the mainstream medical profession now accept that there is more to healing than simply giving somebody a pill. In fact, my own general practitioner, my own MD here, retired about 5 or 10 years ago, and he was a wonderful doctor with a great bedside manner, as we say here. And he retired and went into alternative medicine research. And so he believed that there was much more to it than we were being told.
Yes, I tell people, you know, I don't do the healing. I said, I am the conduit. God's power runs through me and into the person, and that's how it's done. I have no control over it. And over the years, people have been, you know, cured of cancer and fibromyalgia, all kinds of different things. But what people don't seem to understand is when we come down, when we're born and we come down, we contract to experience certain things. We contract to die in certain ways. And some things are set in stone. Like, say, I want to be reborn and I want to die of cancer. If a person comes to me and says, hey, I want you to heal me of cancer, you know, I will know immediately that this is not something that can be done. And I ask God about it, and he'll say, you know, you can help ease the pain, you can help the symptoms, but this is what the person contracted to experience.
Well, this seems like very dangerous stuff, though, for somebody who's in the mainstream. Surely you don't advise people not to carry on with their treatment. You know, you're in the mainstream.
No, never. And I always make sure that people, you know, go to their doctors. You know, if I do a healing or something like that, I tell them, keep up with your doctor, go in for your checkups. I want you to make sure you follow up, because I've been in medicine too long. I don't believe in just saying, oh, you know, it's not that I don't trust in God. I do, absolutely. But, you know, there is the brain of me, you know, that's the medical side that says, go to your doctor, follow up with your doctor, see how you're doing. In fact, I have this gentleman that I've been working on his spine disease, and he said that he went to his doctor and his diagnosis has actually been reversed. He's actually getting better. Mm. Instead of degenerating, it's actually improving.
Mm. Yeah. There must be some things that you won't take on. I ask this for a personal reason, not that I'm asking to use your services, but there's somebody that I once interviewed, and I've had tinnitus. I had a hearing infection a while back, and it put me off work for about 6 months. I thought I'd lost my broadcasting career, and I now have permanent ringing in the ears, or tinnitus. Mm-hmm. And those people who have it, and a lot of people do now.
Yes, my husband does.
Well, you know, it's so common these days. Know that it can be a very variable thing. It can be hell at times, and at other times you don't notice it. But I asked this guy who was a healer, and he said, there are some things that I don't tackle because I don't really get results with it. And that's one of them. So there must be a list of things that you won't go near.
I haven't found them yet. I have actually a woman that I worked on with ringing in the ears, severe ringing in the ears. And I've gotten it down to like very light anymore. Mm. You know, it used to be horrible for the poor woman, and she wore hearing aids on top of it, which made it even worse.
Mm. Well, but no, sometimes, look, I was given the hearing aids. They give you hearing aids to give you a sound. Some of these hearing aids can generate a sound, and the sound is meant to distract you from the sound of the tinnitus. Didn't work with me.
Yeah, it didn't work with her either.
All right. But you know, this is a very controversial area. People will be saying, but you don't need to be meddling in this kind of stuff. And you're really, as some people do, we have to say there have been celebrated cases, and I didn't think we were going to talk about healing, but we'll do it briefly. There have been celebrated cases of people, some of whom are quite well known, being shown to do the most egregious, the most outrageous fakery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it is a gray area, big gray area.
It is. I do not promote that. It is something, when he gave me the gift, he said, I will send people to you by word of mouth only. And it's something that I never charge for, because it's God's gift. It's freely given, and I freely give. I do not believe in charging for God's work.
Okay, but you talk about God. Were you religious before all of this?
Oh, yes. All my life.
Hmm. And did you believe that God had a power of miracles about him?
Oh, yes. You know, when you're raised by a Pentecostal grandmother, it's there. It's always my grandmother. Her brother was a minister, and she grew up in the church. So, very much so.
And do you not get people, we know how polarized religiously the United States is, and this country to an extent as well, let's not kid ourselves. Do you not get people who will say to you, only God can make miracles happen. God does not use graven images or intermediaries, and you're posing to be an intermediary.
God uses, it's the same as when people say, you know, that the Bible says that you can't, you know, to shy away from mediums and psychics. But then what do you think the prophets are? They prophesy things occurring, things happening. They said they spoke with God. Moses spoke with God. You know, so where am I in that? They were just people.
I have a friend who is a psychic medium, known him for years, who believed that Jesus was probably the greatest psychic medium there was. But, you know, this is controversial ground, and people have their faith, and you shake their faith, and you test it at your peril.
Yes, I know. And that's, you know, when I wrote the first book that I wrote, A Medium's Guide to the Paranormal, God asked me to write it. He said, I want you to let people know that I am here. I do hear them. And what they want is not necessarily what they need. I give them what they need. And he said, you're going to have a lot of controversy when you write this book, because it pushes the boundaries of people's beliefs. And I said, it doesn't matter, because I have faith in him, and what everybody else thinks is not important to me. It's like Jesus said, you know, if I do not the work of my Father, then do not believe on me. But if I do the work of my Father, if you don't believe in me, believe in the things I do.
What's the difference between you and here in the UK? We find it hard to connect with such people. It's not really the kind of thing that's done here. But, you know, you see American TV channels, religious programs, and there's a service somewhere, and the guy on the stage says, bring me your sick, bring me your blind, bring me your people in wheelchairs. And so all these people trundle up to the stage there, and the guy lays hands on them, and everybody goes, hallelujah, and the man gets up out of the wheelchair. What's the difference between you and them?
I think it's all showmanship. A, I don't advertise. B, I don't even watch things like that. I think it's bizarre. I asked God one time, I said, why did you choose me for this? He says, because you do your work quietly. He said, you don't make a big fuss about it. You do it quietly. And he says, I judge you by your heart, not necessarily by your actions.
Now that sounds like it makes perfect sense. What kind of nurse are you?
Right now I'm working internal medicine. I'm a OPN,
which is
licensed practical nurse.
Does that mean you work in hospitals?
I used to. I got tired of working weekends and holidays.
The reason I'm asking you that is this surely conflicts, and I'd used that word before, with what you do for a living, because surely you might be at somebody's bedside, and the doctor might have come in and said, I think this person needs this. Can you make sure that he or she gets it? And you think, I don't believe that. I think that person needs a session of healing. What do you do then? That puts you in a terrible position, doesn't it?
I have to separate my medical practice from my private life and my private beliefs. I do what the doctor says.
Understood. You said your sister is your guide. Your sister led this to you. I, of course, I'm inferring from that your sister sadly died, yes?
Yes, she died at 2 months of age. And when I first started hearing her when I was young, she came to me as an adult. And she says, I'm coming to you as an adult because it would look pretty strange if I came to you as a 2-month-old baby and started talking. I'm like, yes. Yeah, that would have freaked me out.
Yeah, no, I think there was a movie about that once, but yes, right. No, well, that sounds, again, eminently sensible. And how old were you when that happened?
I've been able to hear the other side all my life. For the first 5 years, my grandparents raised me, and my grandmother was psychic. And so she taught me how to tell the good ones from the bad ones and how to protect myself. And so I was about 10 or 12 when my sister really, you know, came to me. She was always there. I could always feel her in the background, but she never really said much until then.
And your mother prepared for you for this?
No, my grandmother.
Sorry, your grandmother prepared you for this?
Yeah, my mother lost her gifts. When you turn your back on God, that's what happens.
There will be people listening to this who will say, on the money, absolutely, June. And there will be people who say, she's talking a bit too much about God here. Sounds like almost like religious mania.
Should I be ashamed of God?
No, I don't think you should be ashamed of anything.
No. Yeah, I think that's what I've had people tell me, that that's what they like about me, is I'm not afraid to talk about God. It's like he's a part, he's the reason we're here. So there you go. I don't care if you want to call him Buddha or God or Jehovah or whatever you want to call him, but he's still there.
And why do you think that you were deputed to do this work? Why you and not me?
You know, like I said, I asked him, I said, I'm no saint. I've done things, you know, my younger years, which would be classified as sinning. And so I said, why would you choose me? I'm no better, no worse than anybody else. And he said, again, he said, it's because your heart, I judge you by your heart. And I know that you will do my work because you've done my work in all your other lives.
Boy, do you know anything about those lives?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do.
What do you know?
My last life, I was strangled to death in the 40s. I was out. My husband and child were out at the movies, and I was home cleaning the house, and someone broke in and strangled me.
Good Lord, that's horrendous. And what recollection of that do you have?
I actually do, you know, deep meditation. I went back and relived that life without... You can go back and relive the lives. It's like a library where I go in, I pull down a book, I open it for that particular life, and I tell myself, you know, that I'm going to observe this life and that nothing in this life will hurt me or cause me pain of any kind. And then I review the life, and then I put the book back and move on.
Did you feel the temptation, as most of us might, to research the case of the person who was strangled in the 40s, because presumably some local newspaper would have reported it?
Yeah, it happened in Chicago, actually. There was a minor entry in the Chicago Tribune, and it was just a little blip that said, you know, Mrs. So-and-so was strangled to death in her home, the, you know, second victim. So
you were victim of a serial killer?
Yeah.
Lord. Did you feel the temptation, and some of us wouldn't, some of us would, to make contact with the relatives living now of that person? Or did you feel that would be too intrusive?
Yeah, I felt that that would not be a good thing. It would be too intrusive.
Mm-hmm. Is that the only case where you've been able to verify? I mean, it's amazing that you could, but is that the only case?
No, my husband's one of those people, if you can't touch it, feel it, or see it, it doesn't exist. We're like polar opposites. And he's an auditor, by the way, that's why.
Ah, well, yes, he'll be methodical then.
Yes. Every year growing up, he said, always around Pearl Harbor Day, he became very depressed, very apprehensive, and he's always been afraid of drowning, has absolute fear. He spoke to his mother. She said there was never any even slipping in the bath as a baby, nothing. And so he came to me about 10 years ago, and he said, listen, 3 nights in a row I've had this dream. I'm on the Arizona, and I'm down below in the rec room. He says, I'm walking through water like you walk through air. And the big topic of conversation is, why didn't they come for us? Because they entombed those men down there. He said, then the next thing I know, I'm up on the monument, and I'm running my finger down to find my name. He said, when I find my name, I wake up. He said, can you get me a list of the men that died on the Arizona? So I printed off 18 pages worth of men, and he looked at page 13. He says, this is me. This is who I was. And the name of the person was Raymond Arthur Roby. He said, this is the man I was. I drowned.
And he's an auditor, and he doesn't necessarily believe in all of this.
No.
And what did he, how did that impact him?
The logical side of him said, yes, that makes sense. You know, because this fear of drowning is out of nowhere, absolutely nowhere. And the name that he found was, which was his name. When our son was born, I named him after my grandfather. My grandfather was Ray Arthur.
It's a great big synchronicity, isn't it? Big circle.
There's no such thing as coincidence.
You talk about all of this and what is so interesting and appealing about you in a very matter-of-fact way. I've talked to people here who sound a little bit kind of out there, and you know, you accept that because all people are different. We all have our own right. style, but you are very sober about all of this.
Yeah, it's me. I can't change who I am. I can't change the things I went through, you know, as a child growing up. It's made me the person I am today. And I feel that if you don't want to listen to me, turn off the radio. If you don't want to, you know, talk to me, then walk away. I don't have a problem with that. I'm not going to fault you for it. Everyone is entitled to their own opinion. What I do find fault in is when people get nasty and ugly about it. It's just ridiculous. I had there was a show here, which I won't name names on, and someone had recommended me for their show, and so they asked me to send a little bit about myself, and they were very rude and very nasty and said, well, you know, this is a bunch of, I'll be nice, this is a bunch of garbage, you're nothing but a fake. When they hadn't even talked to me.
Well, so you were set up effectively.
Yeah, basically.
How do you deal with that?
It's like, that's their loss. That's the way I look at it.
This question I've asked a million times on this show, and I think I've always got a different answer, or sometimes a skew on a similar answer. What happens when we die?
Well, been there, done that. I was in a motorcycle accident. I ride motorcycles. I was in a motorcycle accident in 1988. A woman ran a red light and hit me, and a police officer, fortunately, was a couple of cars away, saw it happen. But when he got to me, I had no heartbeat. I had died. I had crossed into the white light, and my grandparents were there waiting for me. And they said, you know, you don't need to be here. This is not your time. And I said, I know. And there was another figure in the background, and his name was Michael. It was not the archangel. And he took me by the hand, and he brought me over to this window, kind of like a bay window. And he said, look down below. And so I saw the earth, and I saw every single living person in the earth. And each person had a little string, little piece of thread coming out of their top of their head up to where we were. And he said, the people with the strings that are lit up are the people that have that awareness, have made the soul contact. The people without the light, with the strings that aren't lit up, have not made that contact with their soul yet. They have not made that connection. And I thought to myself, well, that's kind of cool. I said, well, if heaven exists, I said, what about hell? So he took my hand again and led me over, and the floor was nothing but clouds, you know, all around, but the floor was clouds. And then he waved his arm, and this hole opened up, and I heard the most horrible screams coming out of it, and it looked like hands trying to reach up, almost like black molasses. And, you know, and then he waved his arm again, and it closed back up. I said, okay, hell exists. All right, I'll give you that. And he said, you need to go back. He said, you're going to, in 2 years' time, you're going to have a son. And I'm like, okay. I had just met my husband at the time, so I had no clue about that. And so the police officer finally found a pulse. I came back to my body, almost 2 years later, I had a son.
And that is, were you told anything else about your son?
Oh, yeah. Which is kind of bizarre for me. When you go to the other side, they make you live your life, and all the lives you've ever lived, you review them until you get back to the core life, the original soul. And it probably only took a millisecond, but seemed like forever. And when I got to the core soul, he says, Michael said, this is who you are. This is who your soul belongs to. And I was not prepared for the answer. And I know a lot of people will probably say that I'm crazy, but that's okay. But he says, your soul is Ariel, the archangel. She's one of the angels that guards the throne of God. And I said, well, why would I even come back? Archangels don't come back. And he said, you were sent back by God because you had become hard and calloused, uncaring of man. All you cared about was killing demons. And he said, you will continue to return until you learn to have compassion for man, learn to care for man, and have sympathy. So each life, I guess I learn a little bit more. And I couldn't handle it at the time, so I kind of put it out of my way, out of my mind for a while. But it got me to thinking, in all the years and all the things that I've done with negatives and stuff like that, they always run away from me. I could never figure out why a demon would run away from me. I'm nobody. But then that got me thinking about that. And so God told me, he said, you've done it in all your lives, remove demons, so you're going to continue to do it in this lifetime as part of your job. So I do it.
So you've come back really as a sort of Western-style deputy.
Yeah. Michael, which is kind of funny, is Michael the Archangel has been with me since birth, and he's been with me in all my lives. And he explained to me one day, sat down and explained to me, he says, listen, he says, if you were a sniper in your world, you would be the best of the best. So that's the way Ariel was over there in our side. He said, she is the best besides me, he said, of killing demons.
We'll talk about the demons in just a second. The people who were below the cloud, the people who were screaming, reaching up and had been condemned to hell.
Yeah.
How did they get there? What have they done?
Some of them are people that, like serial killers, something that there is a demon that, which I'm writing my third paranormal encounters book. There is a demon that, what we call the old ones, one of the demons that's been around forever and ever. He was the instigator of Hitler. He was attached to Hitler, and there were two lesser demons that were attached to Himmler and Rommel. And they were the ones who influenced them to commit genocide. So, you know, that it's not a good thing. They're always around.
So the counter to that, do we assume then that Winston Churchill and the wartime leaders in the US, UK, they had a positive influence attached to them?
Yes, yes.
Makes sense.
And Ariel was the one at the time during the Hitler thing. They brought the demons to judgment before God. And it was decided that Ariel would do the destruction of the demons. Mm. And the way she did, Michael showed it to me with a vision in my head. He said, this is what happened. And he showed it to me. And she wrestled with it for a little bit and then drew out a sword of white light and sliced through it. And it just like disintegrated like sand. And it spread out into the universe. So it no longer has consciousness. Mm. That's one of the demons' greatest fears is death. Because when we die, you know, there's something else waiting for us. When they die, there's nothing.
And it's a constant battle between good and evil.
Always, yeah.
I think there will be people, and I'm one of those people too, thinking now, how bad do you have to be to go down there? And I say this because all of us do things in our lives of which we are not proud. In my headlong pursuit of my career, I went from town to town, up and down the dial, as they say, leaving people behind sometimes in not the most thoughtful way. And I'm older now, and I regret some of that. Does that mean I'm going down there?
No, it takes extreme. Right. There are it has to be extreme, like serial killer, and you know, like I said, the demons that influenced Hitler. Hitler went that way. And so did Rommel and Himmler. But it's extreme cases. And you know, like a lot of people believe that if you commit suicide, according to the Catholic Church, you condemn your soul to hell. But that's not true. Why would a loving, forgiving God condemn you to hell when you are in so much pain that you can't stand to live.
So what happens to a suicide? I know you address this in your books. What happens to suicides?
They cross over. They are, they learn lessons. And there's nothing bad that happens to them. Like I said, when you come down, you contract to die in a certain way, even by your own hand.
So that may be part of your contract. I mean, look, we don't want to be encouraging people who might be thinking about that to do it, because it's never...
Absolutely not.
Because of what you leave behind.
Right. Absolutely not. But when we're over there, we don't think about all the pain we cause. We don't think about all the loved ones we'll leave behind. None of that matters, because we're still up there and it's really not real to us. It's only when we get down here in the physical world and that sort of thing happens that you have to once you do die, relive that and learn from it and decide not to do it again.
Right. So you may think there's an escape, and there isn't an escape. You have to confront all of it.
Yep.
Right. Okay, well, I'll note that one and take that on board, and I think that's worth hearing. People dream. I had a dream last week. I was in a recording session with a bunch of people I've never seen before. They were in full color and three dimensions. One of them even told me while they were recording to turn my cell phone off. They seemed to be perfectly real, and when they got to the mixdown stage for this radio jingle that they were making, I woke up. It seemed as real as anything that I can see in front of me now while I was experiencing that. How do you know that you're not having a dream?
See, that's the thing. It's hard. You know, you can wake up from a dream, and sometimes dreams will give you information, or it's about something you're worried about, or it's the other side, you know, your guides and guardians trying to tell you something. It's usually that's the best time for them to be able to get through to you is when you're asleep. Because your mind's quiet, your mind's at rest. So they can go right in there and try to talk to you.
I was tormented and very upset, obviously, when my mother died. It had an immediate impact, whereas my father's death more recently has had an impact that's affected me more over time. After my mother died, I was utterly, utterly devastated. We were very close. The night, or maybe the night after she died, she came to me or appeared to in a dream and asked how I was. And I thought, well, that's either a brilliant fantasy that I'm having or she's really asking how I am.
Yeah, she's really asking how you are. They do that, especially if they're concerned for you. And especially if you're close to like I was with my grandmother. You know, my grandfather and grandmother raised me. I was very close with my grandpa too. And I was in sixth grade. And it was April, and I went to, we have like outdoor schools, what they call it. You spend a week in the outdoors learning about conservation and things. You camp out in cabins and stuff. The first night I was there, I had a dream that was very, very vivid. And my grandfather came to me and said, listen, I've got to tell you, I'm not going to be around. I'm going to have to go. I'm going to have to cross into the other side. I just wanted to let you know that everything's going to be okay. You'll be okay. And that was in April. And I told my grandmother about it. And she said, it's just your grandfather's way of, you know, letting you know that he is going to cross soon, because the soul knows when you're going to cross. And then in September, he died.
You know, I'm sorry for the, well, that's an amazing piece of knowledge to be entrusted with, isn't it? To know that beforehand.
When you're 10 years old.
Good Lord. I've asked this before here, and I'm apologizing now to my listeners who say, oh, you know, you're talking about your experience. But I want to ask about this one, because other people have talked to me about this as well. I was very close to my parents. They were the people who supported me more than anybody else ever has. The people who, of course, loved me unconditionally. They leave an enormous void in my life, even today now that I'm older. I've lost both of them, and it's I still can't compute it. I know everybody says this, but it's very, very hard to take. I've been interested in these things all my life. I've interviewed mediums and psychics and all sorts of people I thought might have a gift, people I thought were complete charlatans. I've done them all over the years. I don't get, me of all people, I'm always surprised that I don't get a sense of their presence. And look, I'm asking this because I am not alone in saying this about that situation. So why would that be?
It would be because of your grief. over the loss of them, even as far back as now. A lot of people will subconsciously block themselves, even though they're saying to themselves, I really want to make that connection. I really want to make that connection. But they're so still so much have so much grief going on that they can't make that connection. It's very, you know, it's kind of like you want to know the answer, but you're not really sure you want to know. You know, that type of situation. I've had that happen quite a bit. So I don't feel my mother around me, or I don't feel my, you know, girlfriend around me or whatever. And I say, because you're still grieving. I mean, people grieve in different ways. And you may throw yourself into your work as part of to being able to take your mind off of it. But if you stop, do you meditate at all?
Not really. I'm afraid I'm just a regular kind of guy who goes on the radio, drinks too much coffee, you know how it is.
What you can do is just get a, you know, just sit down with a glass of warm milk. Maybe you don't like milk. Drink something warm, sit in a quiet spot where you're very, very comfortable. Close your eyes and just let your mind go blank. I know that's going to be hard for you.
Well, sadly, there's always something going on in there.
But the thoughts that, you know, that flutter through, just let them go through, and just kind of just let yourself relax, your body relax, and don't try to sense anything. Just relax, and that's when they can come through. People sometimes try too hard. My sister-in-law was like that. She tried too hard. She wanted to hear from her mother so bad that she was just trying, and she was actually blocking herself. And finally, she just let it all go, and that's when she heard from her mother.
I think weird things do happen. Strange things do happen. And I think they probably happen for a reason. Let's talk about what I wanted to talk about, and that is the taking on and slaying of demons, which seems to be something that you were born to do.
Yeah, I don't kill them, because I can't. When I'm in mortal form, I can't do that. But I can send them back to the darkness. And I'm never alone when I do that. I mean, you'd be foolish to be alone. Michael, the archangel, is always with me, if not. And sometimes Gabe comes along, Gabriel, or sometimes Raphael. Just depends upon who wants to join in. But I will go to I'll know before I even get to a location that there's either an earthbound negative or a demonic present. Mm. Sometimes both.
But people call you in like they called in Ghostbusters in the movie, don't they?
Yeah. I love that movie. But no, they will call, you know, I usually get referrals from others. I belong to a paranormal investigative group called Northwest Paranormal Investigative Team. And I have a lot of friends that are mediums and stuff, and that have, you know, paranormal groups that investigate. And if it's something that they can't handle, they will, you know, text me, call me, send me an email, say, hey, you know, there's this woman, she's got a problem. We think there's, you know, a negative there. We want you to come over and check it out. And it's usually by referral. I don't go seeking them, let me tell you that.
When you say a negative, what exactly is that?
There are earthbound spirits that were nasty in life, and they're nasty in death. And because they either want power, or are mad at being dead, or, you know, maybe they were a serial killer in life or something. They were just negative in life and negative in death, because they don't ascend. They just die. The physical body dies, and they stay trapped between our world and the next veil. And they like it that way, because they, you know, can make you see them as 10-foot tall shadow people, or big giants, or a big giant spider, or whatever, because they can put images into your head of how they want you to see them. And those are the earthbound. Those are the easy ones to deal with. Then there are the demonics. The old ones rarely come out. They don't bother with us down here. Rarely do they. But the lesser demons, which are the ones that are below the old, what I call the old ones, the old demons, they're the ones you'll find mostly trying to cause havoc here in the physical world. And those are the ones I usually end up have to go and remove them from a house or a person or a piece of land sometimes. And then shadow people. They're a whole nother, they are minions, and they are connected to, Lucifer, the way that the angels are connected to God, one type, one consciousness. But they are different. Demons travel in packs. They're like herding animals. They travel in packs. But shadow people like to be on their own. They like their own territory. They don't want more than one, you know, shadow person being there. They like their own territory.
A lot of us enjoyed the movie The Exorcist, but just looked at it as entertainment. Have you been in a situation like that?
I look at that as entertainment too, because I don't, you know, you see The Exorcist and you see the priests and they're, you know, doing these for days on end, weeks, you know, they're doing the, trying to do the removal and stuff. And I look at that and I say, why do they have to make it that hard? I don't understand. Because when I go in, it only takes a couple of minutes to get rid of them. And I don't have to do a lot of ceremony. I'm a very quiet person. So when I go in to remove them, it's all done telepathically. If somebody wants to know what I'm doing, you know, I will speak out loud, but I'm so used to communicating telepathically that it's hard for me to speak out loud. And people tell me that when I do remove them, when I remove a demon and I'm in the presence of a demon, Ariel comes out, and they tell me that my whole face changes, that it's not the same person. And this one, they said that, you know, that she's just, you know, she looks like she means business, and she's very hard looking and very angry looking, and because she doesn't like demons. And then once the demon is gone, then, you know, my consciousness comes out.
And when you're in that situation, you can obviously communicate with the thing you're trying to get rid of. What does it say to you?
Not nice things. Demons are kind of stupid. I don't care what anybody says. They're stupid. Because demons judge you by your appearance. Like some people, they will take a look at you and say, you're nothing. There's no reason for him to be, for them to worry that you're just another mortal trying to, you know, get rid of them, and it's not going to happen. Because I keep Ariel cloaked and I don't show her. And they don't look beneath the surface. They just look on the surface. And they're always, always completely surprised when Ariel comes out. They just freak badly. They're not nice at all. But you know what? It's just like, is that the best you got? So I tell them, is that the best you got? Then you're in trouble, man.
And they always go?
They always go, yeah. They may go kicking and screaming, but they'll always go.
What about the effect on you? Do they leave anything behind with you?
No, I usually, and when I, once I get through with that, I'll go outside or go to a quiet place and just get rid of the negativity that they exude when I have to deal with them. And then that's okay. Then it's gone from me. And then, you know, it takes me about a week to recover, but, you know, because it makes me really tired. But other than that, you know, I may have doubts about everything else, you know, other things in my life, you know, but when I'm doing that for God, I have absolutely no doubt. It's like, I know what I have to do. I know how to do it. And I know that God will help me do it. And Michael will be right by my side. And I have no doubts. I think that's what's wrong with some people who try to remove demons, or even priests that try to remove them, is they have doubt. If you have doubt, these things are going to go for it. They know your weaknesses. they know you have those doubts, and they're going to find that chink in your armor and go like a shark for the kill. And you can't have any doubt. If you're going to do something like this, you cannot have any doubt whatsoever.
We all, I think, those of us who are in the sort of general media, assume that when you talk about demons, you're talking about sort of haunted houses, that kind of thing. Can these things attach themselves to people?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do. A lot of the times, people will, in fact, I had a woman that, you know, thought that she could help. She thought that this entity that came to her was her friend, and she was going to help him cross over, and she invited him to come in, so to speak, and it ended up being a demon. And she spent 3 or 4 years with it attached to her.
What did it do?
It would, like, physically attack her. It would deprive her of sleep. It would, you know, she'd be in church. She was Catholic. She'd be in church, and it would be interrupting church, calling her all kinds of things, you know, saying explicit things while she was in church, calling God, you know, saying he can't save you, he can't help you, nobody can help you, this type of thing. You
and do you have to be? Do you have to believe in those things to be affected by them? She was religious, went to church, so she would be affected.
Yeah, she would be affected, but no, because people believe, you know, if I don't believe in them, they can't hurt me. Wrong. They can hurt you if they choose to. The thing is, they don't just pick on anybody. It's, if that was, you know, a lot of people think that if I talk about them, they're going to come for me. They're going to be, you know, come and get me. But that's not true. It's, the thing is, they go for people. They know your future, just as the angels know your future. And they can see that you're going to, you know, work for the light, do something good for the light, you know, in a big way, they're going to pick on you. They're going to find you. They don't need any help to find you. They'll find you if they want to.
We're talking about, I'm sorry, you were just about to say something about drug people, drug dealers?
You know, people that are most vulnerable are people with, you know, substance abuse, depression, a lot of anger in their lives, lives that are, you know, disarrayed.
So the demons look for a gap in your armor.
Yeah, they do. And they'll find it. They'll try to, sometimes they may appear to you as a child or a best friend that died or, you know, any way they can dig themselves in. And once they get you, they're not going to let go of you.
So how do we poor innocent earthlings tell the difference between the good ones and the bad ones?
Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference. Over the years, I've learned to, and in my new book, I put in there that if you truly run into a demon, you will have this horrible, sick feeling in the pit of your stomach. You'll feel nauseated. You'll feel cold on the inside. It's got not like a ghost. If you run into a ghost, you know, there are cold spots externally. These are all inside. It makes you feel like you're frozen inside. And then there's also, you can smell, you know, rotting flesh, sulfur. They're pitch black. Most people see them as pitch black entities that are masses. And they enjoy causing arguments in families. It feeds them. They live off of the fear and the sorrow and the jealousy and anger. You know, that's basically how you can tell. Unfortunately, you know, your run-of-the-mill person is not going to know that. I had a woman when I was down in Vegas doing a talk for my book, and I was down there for 5 days. On the second day there, she said, I finished with the people I was doing readings for, and it was about lunchtime, and I asked my hostess, I said, do we have somebody else coming? And she says, no, you have, you know, an hour and a half to have lunch. And I'm like, somebody's coming. I said, and they have a demon attached to them. And the next thing she knows, the doorbell rings. And this woman is standing there. And she says, I've been trying to get a hold of you for 2 days, but your line is always busy. Well, the line hasn't been busy. You know, I mean, we've been not on the phone at all. And so I told her, I said, come in here. I said, I need to talk to you. I said, how long have you had this demon attached to you? And she's like, is that what it was? What happened was when she was about 5 years old, she was in a car accident with her parents. Her parents died. They lost her for a couple of moments. And then she came back, but she came back with a demonic attachment. And she said, my life has been like there's one big black cloud hanging over it. Everything that goes wrong, that could go wrong, does go wrong. My health is failing. My older brother is embezzled. My trust fund from my parents says, I can't do anything. I'm living in poverty. I don't even have any health insurance. I'm like, well, you know, it's because of the demon. I said, that's what they do. They love that stuff. So basically, we removed the demon, and she emailed me for a couple years after that saying how much her life has changed and how well she was doing. She was even touring Europe. She was so happy. I'm like, cool.
In my life, I've known and worked with a couple of people, not very many, who I've sometimes suspected, are they working with some kind of dark energy here? Mm-hmm. Or am I just imagining this? But they did seem to be evil in the purest sense, without concern for other people in any way. I mean, in a really nasty, horrible, almost perverted of decency way. Can such things happen?
Sure. It's called demonic influence. It's not always one of the lesser demons. It can be a minion that's attached itself to them. You know, especially if the person is really interested in power and money and, you know, creating a persona for themselves or, you know, moving up the corporate ladder by any means, no matter what. Sure, they, you know, you can pick up demonic influence by, you know, just a minion. And they can be just as nasty. They're not as heavy duty, but they can be just as nasty. They can influence you. They can, you know, help you get what you want. But the price you have to pay is a whole nother situation.
And if you were brought into a situation like this, where somebody was using some kind of entity to aggrandize themselves, to enrich themselves, whatever, to the great cost of other people, which does happen, I'm sure. Yeah, if you were brought into that situation, could you deal with it? Could you take on something that somebody was willingly and willfully using?
Oh, yeah. It's not a matter of that. It's a matter of, it's like I tell people, if I come across a spirit that's haunting a house, but they're only haunting it because they love the place and they want to stay there, Then I have sit down and have a talk with them and leave them alone. As long as they don't cause any problems, no problem. But if I come into a situation where there's a spirit that's causing problems, I'll either tell it, you got to straighten up. If you're not willing to straighten up, I'll take you out. I'll make sure that you cross over. So something like that. If I came across somebody that I knew had something attached to them, I would just remove it and not tell them.
I'm going to give you a list of names.
Okay. Send them on.
Juna, pleasure to talk with you. What a fascinating conversation. We have to do this again. It's only fair that I give you a chance to tell people about your website and how people can find out more about you.
They can go to my website, which is www.mysticconnections. Make sure you put the S on it. .org. And you can contact me through my website. I have papers that will, you know, I have documents in there for protection, things like that. You can make appointments. You can contact me, like I said, via that. And I have books. I have A Medium's Guide to the Paranormal, and I have Paranormal Encounters, Book 1 and 2. And then the one I just released, which is The Dark Side of the Paranormal. But and I'm on Facebook and I'm on Twitter.
Okay. Let's clear this up before you go. Okay. The sessions that you have with people, you charge for. I've seen that, you know, some of them $70, $50.
Yeah, that's psychic readings. Yeah.
Right. If you do those readings for people, an exchange of cash has to take place. I've heard people say if you were genuine in what you do, you wouldn't take money.
I got to earn a living. I mean, I may work as a nurse, but, you know, like I said, I do not charge for the God stuff. I don't charge for healings. Mm-hmm. I don't charge for demonic removal. You know, I just don't do it. And if people can't afford it, if people come to me and say, you know, I'd like to have a reading. I've got something bad going on in my life and I really need it. I'll do it for free because my son tells me I'm a soft touch.
June, pleasure to talk with you. A medium with your feet well and truly on the earth by the sounds of it. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
June Lundgren in Oregon, United States. We'll have her back on this show, I think. Tell me what you thought about her. Go to the website, theunexplained.tv. You can send your feedback there and make future guest suggestions. And as I said at the top of this, I will be doing a whole load of shout-outs, probably in the next edition. And if I don't do it in the next edition, I will collate them all and do it in the edition after. Life is a little silly at the minute for a whole variety of reasons, but we're getting there slowly. Thank you for the emails. Keep them coming. Stay in touch. Great guests on the way, and more details about those coming soon. My name is Howard Hughes. I am in London. This has been The Unexplained, and until we meet again right here, please stay safe, stay calm, and stay in touch. Thank you. Bye-bye.